जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारे जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिपराज गचार्यास्तरसत शिमाधि सेवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज गचार्य अस्तोतर सत शिमाधि सेवाइन ग्रेस भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी महाराज श्रील प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की इस्कॉन फाउंडर आचार्य श्रील प्रभुपाद की ग्रंथराश्रम भागवतं की हिताय गौर प्रेमानंदे ओ ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज ओ ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज ओ ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज ओ ग्लोरीज टू शिशि गुरु एंड शि गौरंग ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, entitled Withdrawal of the Cosmic Creations, Chapter 1. Chapter 1, text number 8. Chapter is entitled The Manus, Administrators of the Universe.
Sunandajam Barshashatam Padeike Nabubam Sprisham Tapyo manas tapo ghoram Idan ambaha bharata Sunandajam barshashatam Padaikena bhuvan spritam Tapya manas tapo ghoram Idan amba kahvarata Sunandajam barshashatam Padaikena bhubanspriśam Tapyamanas tapo ghoram Idam amba kahvarata
Please chant. Sunandajam. On the bank of the river Sunanda. Barshashatam. For 100 years. Pada ekena. On one leg. Bhuvan. The earth. Sprisham. Touching. Tapyamanaha. He performed austerities. Tapaha. Austerities. Ghoram. Very severe. Idam, the following, Ambaha, and spoke, Bharata, O Sion of Bharat. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. O Sion of Bharat, after Swayambhuva Manu had thus entered the forest with his wife, he stood on one leg, on the bank of the river Sunanda, and in this way, with only one leg touching the earth, he performed great austerities for 100 years. While performing these austerities, he spoke as follows. For poor. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that the word Ambaha means that he chanted or murmur to himself, not that he lectured to anyone. Next verse, text number 9.
Sri Manur Uvacha Jena Cheta Jate Bishwam Bishwam Cheta Jate Najam Jo Jagarti Sajanesmin Nyanajam Tam Beda Bedasa.
Translation. Lord Manu said, the Supreme Living Being has created this material world of animation. It is not that he was created by this material world. When everything is silent, the Supreme Being stays awake as a witness. The living entity does not know him, but he knows everything. Here is a distinction between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entities. Nityo Nityanam Chetanas Chetananam Katha Upanishad 2.2.13. According to the Vedic version, the Lord is the Supreme Eternal, the Supreme Living Being. The difference between the Supreme Being and the ordinary being is that when this material world is annihilated, all the living entities remain silent in oblivion, in a dreaming or unconscious condition, whereas the Supreme Being stays awake as the witness of everything. This material world is created, it stays for some time, and then it is annihilated. Throughout these changes, however, the Supreme Being remains awake. In the material condition, all living entities, they are, in the material condition of all living entities, there are three stages of dreaming. When the material world is awake and put into working order, this is a kind of a dream, a waking dream. When the living entities go to sleep, they dream again. And when unconscious at the time of annihilation, when this material world is unmanifested, they enter another stage of dreaming. At any stage in the material world, therefore, they are all dreaming. In the spiritual world, however, everything is awake.
Om Agyana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vasaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namine नमस्ते सरस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचरिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादि पश्चात्यादशतनुमे वंचाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभ्यः च पतितनं पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः.
सो द नरेशन दैट Srila Sukadev Goswami is telling Maharaj Pariksit about the activities of the Manus, so this is this chapter, comes from the question that Maharaj Pariksit asked Sukadev Goswami, basically in the previous chapter. Sukadev Goswami narrated some of the descendants of Swayambhuva Manu, the whole dynasty of Swayambhuva Manu, how it happens that that from the dynasty was described. So now Pariksit Maharaj wanted to know more about all the different Manus, all the activities of the Manus, and especially he wanted to understand how the Supreme Lord manifests, not only manifested in the previous Manus that were there, but also how he's manifesting in the present Manus, and how he will manifest in the future Manus like that. So we know that the Manus, they rule in different periods of time during the day of Brahma. So he wanted to know everything about. And so Srila Sukadev Goswami starts with explaining about Swayambhuva Manu. And Swayambhuva Manu, his wife was Satarupa, and they have two daughters, Devahuti and Akuti. Devahuti became the mother of Lord Kapiladev, and Akuti became the mother of Jagyamurti. So it's another incarnation of the Lord, Jagya. And so what we're going to hear in this part of the Bhagavatam, this narration from Srila Sukadev Goswami, is more, he already explained about Lord Kapiladev, so now he's going to explain more about Jagyamurti, Lord Jagya. But in this particular case, he's just starting by explaining when Swayambhuva Manu retire as a great king, as a Rajarshi, the point is that at one stage he retires from material activities and goes into the forest and starts to perform austerities for the purpose of self-realization, or to fully focus on his spiritual constitution. So it's explained here that he went into the forest and performed these severe austerities, standing in one leg for 100 years. And as he's standing in one leg for 100 years, he was saying to himself this particular verse, Jena Chitta Yate Vishwam. Vishwan cheta yate nayam. You know, this word cheta is the same word that we use as consciousness, chaitanya, or cheto darpana marjanam. The is being conscious, consciousness. The word cheta. So cheta yate is translated here as brought into animation, basically becoming animated, becoming active. being conscious means, you know, that you're conscientious of your surrounding and you interact with it. How you interact with your surroundings, you know. So that's being conscious. And so it's explained here, this jena cheta yate vishwam, that from the Lord, He is the one who created the whole world of consciousness. The whole, he said here, the world of animation, not necessarily, you know, something like Disney or something like that, you know, animated, you know, things, cartoons and things like that. No, but the conscious world, the conscious creation, everything is conscious, you know. So that comes from him. However, he says, Vishwan che tayate nayam, that the Lord, it is not that he was created by this material world. So he creates the material world, not the contrary, that the material world creates the Lord. And this is basically one of the most sound arguments against this impersonal philosophy, that the Bhagavatam basically have no space for that. That's why the impersonalists, they don't necessarily pay too much attention to the Bhagavatam, or avoid rather the Bhagavatam, because it's very clearly stated. So, the impersonalists, they accept, you know, that Lord, the absolute truth is an energy, Brahman, and variegateness is a product of this material. Material energy. So anything that has form, anything that has variety, that is a product of matter, the material, the prakriti, the material energy. So when there's the Lord assumes, or the form of the Lord by the Majavadis or by the impersonalists, is understood that it's a product of the material energy. So we see that Swayambhuva Manu is murmuring to himself. It's almost like, you know, this is something that we constantly, you know, remind ourselves, because it is explained that the tendency of the embodied soul in this material body, is to be sort of conditioned, you know, by material energy, and so it's important that we constantly understand this basic principle of transcendental knowledge, that there is a difference between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entity, and also there is a difference between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his energies. And although Swayambhuva Manu is a pure devotee, in fact, Swayambhuva Manu is one of the 12 Mahajans, still, he tells himself these things, you know. He's saying to himself that everything comes from the Lord and is not, you know, the material nature, everything that we see in this world comes from the Lord, is not the contrary, that the Lord comes from this material universe. So, so it's an important distinction. It's the basis of transcendental knowledge, that we understand who is God and who we are and what is our relationship with Him. In the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks, you know, about the impersonalists and the devotees, the Jnani Yogi and the Bhakti Yogi. And he asks basically, you know, well, what is the difference and which one is better? Which path is better? And then Krishna said that both are transcendentalists and both of them will reach event, you know, both of them will reach the destination, the bona fide path. It's not, you know, that is a bogus path. You know, those who are very attached to the impersonal conception, you know, they're transcendentalists, but Krishna says that their path is very troublesome. Very troublesome. Meaning that the whole conception is very difficult because it's full with different traps. And our Vaishnava Acharyas says that the biggest trap that the living entity will find in this material world is within that path. So the jnana. So you have to be able to avoid that trap is very troublesome. You have to have the mercy of a devotee. Even in that path, you have to, in order to be able to avoid that. It's explained that what originally brings us to this material world is the desire to take the position of Krishna, to become God. And the impersonal path, that's the trap that is there. Okay, that after many, many, many lives of a struggle in this material world, finally you come to take up the process of self-realization. You know, manushyanam sahastresu, out of many thousands of men, one may endeavor for self-realization. Many thousands of men. So, you know, this rare person who's endeavoring for self-realization and then performing so many austerities, he comes to the position of, you know, he comes in front of this trap to think, oh, I'm one with God. I'm God. Then you're back to square number one. So, Prabhupada quotes this verse very much. How's it start? No, it's not just. No. It's the verse that says patantyado nadrita jusman angra jaha. I got a blank, but basically says that all those who are not devotees, transcendentalists, that in their mind they think that they're liberated, but actually they're not, because their intelligence is polluted by this conception that, you know, I'm one, I'm God. And then they go to great, great austerities, and they achieve through the austerities that destination that they're looking for. Even if they achieve to become one, merging into Brahman, Sayuja Mukti, they will fall down again. Why? Because Jusman Angrajaha, they neglected the lotus feet of the Lord.
Jiniera vindaksha vimuda maninas twaji ashtabava abhishuda buddhaya aruhyo krichena padam padam tatam padanti anondan anonadrita jushman angrajaha.
That's the verse. It's a verse given by Lord Brahma that he explains, you know, about, he explains first about the devotees, and then he explains about all others, including Mayavadis and personally. So it's very difficult. You have this big trap. So it's very troublesome. And then Krishna says, for the devotees, however, for the bhakti yogis, then it becomes very easy. It's a very natural, simple, and easy process. And the anchor of the process for the embodied soul in this material world that takes to bhakti yoga is deity worship. That's the anchor. And then it's in the purport of Prabhupada's, one of Prabhupada's, the verse that says that it's very troublesome for the Mayavadis. He says, for the devotees, it's simple. And because the devotees have, the embodied soul is more or less pretty much absorbed in material forms. That's what we all able to function and perceive. So the Lord assumes, or the Lord descends in the form of the deity, so we can actually interact with the transcendental form of the Lord and perform devotional service. So because of that, then it becomes very simple. It becomes very simple to do service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to perform bhakti with the Lord descending, you know, as the deity, the archavigraha. So so that's a very important thing that, you know, we see that Swayambhuva Manu is telling himself as he performs austerities, which, you know, you can imagine such a great personal, powerful personality. And even this powerful personality, this is what he's telling to himself, murmuring to himself while performing these austerities. You know, it's almost like, you know, what Krishna say, everything emanates from him. And, you know, he's a supreme controller. Here's God, and here I am. There's a difference between chetanas, chetananas, you know, chetanas, chetananas. Chetanas, chetananam. Chetanas means that there is a single. Chetananam means that there is the many. So there is two. There is the nitya and there's the nityanam. Nityo nityanam. That what the acharyas explain is that there is not redundancy in the Vedic scriptures. You know, they're very accurate. There's so much volumes of knowledge in just, you know, one phrase, and it's very accurate. So the scriptures tell us this nityo and nityanam. It describes two, that there is a single conscious entity and there is the many conscious entities. It doesn't make sense if everything is just one. Why would you say the one conscious and the many conscious? Why won't you say all the conscious beings? You know, like that.
if you're referring to, you know, if everybody is equal, if there's a same level between the living entity and the personality of Godhead, if they're the same, why differentiate like that? Nityo Nityanam, the single Nityo, or the single eternal and the many eternals. Chetanas, the single conscious and the many conscious. Chetananam. So what is the difference between the two? Eko bahunanjo bidadati kamam. That the one single one is providing for all the rest. So that's that verse from the Katha Upanishad. And so the Mayavadi wants to make the Supreme Personality of Godhead equal with the jiva, with the living entity. And that's the trap that takes you back to square number one. And it's a very unfortunate thing for these people, because it will take millions and millions of lives. Because you have to start. The problem with the material world is that there is no going, you know, there's no hovering, and then maybe, okay, now I'm going up, now I'm going, and you know, there's no such a thing as this. Either you're going up or you're going down in terms of your consciousness. So if you're going down, you're going down, and then, you know, you can go up. But if you don't come across with a devotee in your path, then the natural thing is that the material energy will just pull your consciousness down. So you come, you fall, say, the transcendentalist, who is an impersonal, falls down because of being a transcendentalist, a very pious entity, it falls into a, you know, very high position in the material world. But then that high position creates, you know, reactions. Literally, you go step down, step down, step down, step down, and then there you go, all the way down. So the description is like it's a wheel. Samsara wheel, Brahmanda Brahmine, Brahmite Kona. It's like a Ferris wheel. You reach the high point and then you start to go down, and then reach the lowest point and then go up again. And you can go from that thing millions and millions and millions of life. At one point, it's going to click. After doing this for who knows, countless life, then bahunanjammanante gyanavam, you come to the end of all knowledge, gyanavam, finally, this gyanavam mam prapadyante, you know, you come to the end of knowledge, and then what do you do? Mam prapadyante, you surrender. Krishna say they surrendered unto me, finally, when you go to that. But that can only happen if you come across with a devotee. So we see the examples of the impersonalists who were transformed by coming across with a devotee or having some contact with the personality of Godhead. Then the whole thing becomes awakened. And then, you know, that's when their, you know, eternal position becomes, you know, manifested, the case of the four Kumaras, when they were able, they were Brahma bodies, you know, attached to the impersonal conception. And when they had darshan of Lord Vishnu, and specifically this the specific thing that touched and changed their heart was the tulsi leaf in that were on the lotus feet of the Lord. The fragrance of the tulsi leaf completely changed, you know, the whole conception like that. So the image of the lotus feet of the Lord is very important. And then this verse, Patanti ado nadrita yushman angrajaha. Angrajaha means, you know, the lotus feet of the Lord. So it's an important thing that we have to constantly remind. For us, we're fortunate that we are under the shelter of Srila Prabhupada, that Prabhupada is known as Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatyade Shatarine, the glories of Prabhupada, that he came to this world to completely eradicate impersonalism and voidism. So that's the acharya that we're taking shelter of, the great Vaishnava acharya. So we're very lucky. Otherwise, impersonalism pervades everything, pervades all major religions, and it's also present sometimes but anyway, it's all pervasive in the world. So Srila Prabhupada has come to save us from that. So for us, it's very clear. You know, you ask any devotee, even a child, who's God and who you are, you know, we know that we can say it. At least we can say it, you know, theoretically. We all convince, you know, that we're trying to become fully established in our relationship with Krishna. You don't hear devotees saying, yeah, I want to be, I'm, you know, my purpose is to become Krishna. You don't hear that. So it's a great fortune, you know. So there's this important point in the verse too, that Swayambhuva Manu also was saying, that which is also another important point, a philosophical point, that we learn that there is a difference between Krishna and the common living entity. That Krishna, that Nityanam, is always conscious in all the stages of the creation. And the living entity, the consciousness is basically covered, is affected by the material world. So to the point that the living entity is always dreaming. So it's all the different things that we experience here in terms of happiness and distress, in terms of activities, in terms of you know, all these different things that, you know, the living entities engage in this world, is considered a dream. And in one sense, you know, it happens basically in your mind, that matra sparsas takunteya sitosni sukadukaya, that these perceptions of happiness and distress, I like this and I don't like that, I'm so happy, you know, I'm trying this, I'm doing that, I'm, you know, building this, I'm building that for the purpose of getting this or getting that, it's all considered like a dream. It's all the mind perceiving, I like this, I don't like that, I want this, I don't want that, like that. So Krishna says that these things are arising from sense perception. Just like, you know, summer and winter, you know, happiness and distress is like that. So it's explained that when the material world, in the material world right now, we consider to be sleepwalking, dreaming, how you say, Prabhupada say, walking dream. So we walking around just dreaming. And then when we go to sleep, it's like dreaming on the top of dream. And then when the world is annihilated, then we go into an unconscious stage that is also dreaming. So basically, throughout our sad material, you know, reality, here we're always dreaming. So the whole purpose of human life is to become conscious. So Krishna conscious becomes to awaken from the dream. So that's the whole thing. When finally we're able to awake from this dream, then that's when we consider that we're Krishna conscious. So I stop here. If there's any comment or question, microphone is there, Manoj. Yeah, get it for microphone.
Thank you, Prabhu, for your wonderful class. First of all, I'd just like to thank the devotees, despite my antics, because I've been sending out an email for years, you know, Krishna Katha to most of the devotees in the temple, and despite my antics, they're still very merciful to me and for some reason, and I appreciate that. My question is kind of about the first verse about austerity, how Manu stood on one leg for thousands of years. So there's many austerities we go through voluntarily or involuntarily. And one thing I appreciate about, I bring many stories about austerity up, but one thing I'm thinking about is austerities of giving up false prestige. And I'm thinking of one story about my uncle. My uncle's name is Ronnie. When he was, he went to a parent-teacher's conference with his sons. And other, you know, parents and students were there, but they had to sign a paper and read some long paper of something about their student. And so then the teacher asked all the parents, because the teacher probably knew some of the parents couldn't read. So the teacher said, "Is anyone in this room that can't read?" Now my uncle knew that there were some parents who couldn't read, but he could read. But so he knew that they were embarrassed to say that I can't read. So one thing I appreciated what he did is that he stood up, you know, very confidently and told the teacher loudly so everyone can hear him. He was like, "I can't read. You know, can you show me how to, you know, what this contract or whatever this paper I have to sign for my son says?" And so then he went up, the teacher explained to them. And that's one thing I really appreciate. That's an austerity. So that's one aspect of austerity. Or if somebody didn't graduate from high school, that's very embarrassing or an austerity. And I realized that some of those austerities that reveal to others, you get the most mercy from Krishna, I kind of realized. And one austerity that maybe you can answer a question about is that other austerities, not chanting Hare Krishna, not going through, you know, fasting, because those don't directly affect the false ego or get rid of one's false ego. One austerity I realized is that apologizing to others, that's an austerity. And two pastimes that I appreciate is that King Rahugana, he apologized to Jatabharta voluntarily when he insulted him. So he's heard Jatabharta speak. He was like, "Oh, this is, you know, amazing devotee. Let me apologize." And then there's another method of apologizing, forcing, like Vishnu forced Durvasa Muni to apologize. So my question basically is that if we've gone through our whole spiritual life, One last other point, even in Prabhupada Leelamrita, in the last chapter, you see Prabhupada apologizing to his god brothers, you know, please forgive me, you know, for making so unfit. He's like, I did become a little puffed up, you know, from all my, you know, success in Krishna consciousness, so please forgive me for all my offenses. So we see we have to follow in the footsteps. So my question basically is that if we've gone through our whole entire Krishna conscious experience in life without apologizing to anyone, is there probably something wrong with that, or does that mean we haven't made a mistake, or does that mean, what does that essentially mean, or does that mean we have to improve, or that we never made any mistakes, or can you elaborate on that point? If we've gone through our whole Krishna conscious life, can't remember the last time we apologized to anyone.
Well, it depends on the individual, I would say. You know, I mean, I can speak, you know, like, yeah, this applies to, you know, every single person, but even Krishna apologizes. So, you know, when he apologizes to the gopis, you know, I can repay you for your service. So I'm sorry. So just be happy with just your devotion, you know, like that. So there will be, in case of most of us, you know, for sure, is the most likely there will be something wrong with ourselves. Well, you know, I would say rather that if you don't apologize, if you're so self-absorbed that you don't see that, you know, that if you inadvertently or consciously or unconsciously you commit some offense, then without apologizing, it doesn't make sense. So it's an important aspect. I would say like this, you're speaking about austerities, and for us, you know, basically we've been given the instruction for Lord Chaitanya to, you know, the famous Trinadapi Sunyachina verse, that these four things that we have to cultivate to be able to chant Hare Krishna, chant, you know, our rounds properly and constantly, to be able to chant the holy name constantly. So, and, you know, it's not a simple thing. It's something that you have to cultivate. The idea of being humble like a blade of grass is a rough one, you know, when it comes to the crunch, you know, to take things with humility. The humility part is that when it is how we see ourselves. If I see myself according to what Lord Chaitanya is directing me to be, a servant of the servant, not just a servant, is anudas. Anu das. Anu means infinitesimal. You know, like the Lord is Vidu and we're Anu. So Vidu means, you know, he's unlimited, great. And Anu means like atomic. So we're Anu das. Anu das means like not just a das, but an anudas, which is an infinite, an insignificant servant. I'm the insignificant servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, you know, like so many way down there. So if we think ourselves like that I'm just a servant of the devotees, then what do I have to protest, you know, if my master, you know, just neglect me? I mean, this is business, you know, he's my master. If the boss is the boss, if your boss, sort of like, who's paying you, you know, giving your salary, you know,
sort of neglects you, or tells you, you know, whatever. You know, I mean, if you want to get your salary, I mean, you can say to the boss, hey, go to hell, and then you have no job. So you're in trouble. So the point is, if I'm a servant, then naturally I'll be cultivating humility. If I'm considering that, you know, Lord Chaitanya says, you know, Asli Syaba Padan Ratan Pinastu Man, Krishna is my Lord. So he can do whatever. He can neglect me, or he can, you know, he can do whatever he wants. So that's a mood of humility. And it's not a simple thing, because we just don't want to be the insignificant servant. I mean, at least we want to be, you know, like, okay, I serve you, but you serve me back too. You know, or at least, you know, acknowledge my service, you know, and say, oh, how nice, like type of thing, you know. So it's not, humility is a difficult thing. And then comes, you know, tolerance. Very tough when it comes to the crunch. Because, you know, when someone rob us the wrong way, I mean, if someone pressed your red buttons, we all have red buttons somewhere, you know, in our system, you know, like, you know, you open that little door and they have that big red button. And in general, you know, when you have when relationships becomes more, they transcend just the, you know, the formal stuff and gets more intimate, you know, in terms of friendship, or in terms of, you know, in you know, parental or conjugal, like that. Then as it gets intimate, you know, those persons, they know all your little compartments, you know. You're more exposed. So the red buttons get touched several times when you're, you know. So when that red button is touched, then, okay, let me see your tolerance. You know, you go like, I mean, forget about the whole humility business, forget about the whole devotee business. You know, you just start to, you know, it comes out. The lower nature that is there still, that we're trying to clean, comes out. And it's horrible. I mean, it's a very sort of experience, like, oh my God, you know, I'm still have some serious cleaning to do. But we ask to cultivate tolerance. So it's austerity, it's an austerity, but it's a necessary austerity, humility and tolerance. And then, even more tough, you give respect to everybody. Everybody, you respect everybody. So showing respect means that, you know, you have always to be controlled in terms of how you deal with others, with great respect. And even more tough is that you don't expect, the next one, you don't expect that being respected back. That's a rough one too. Because, you know, we all in our conditioned state, you know, unless we are a completely purified being, you know, in the level of Brahman realization, we have some motivations when we do things. At least we want to be reciprocated. So you cultivate, no, I'm doing this, but I don't need reciprocation. I'm doing this because I'm a servant, because that's my service to my Guru Maharaj, Guru and Krishna. If I'm saved myself, I'm a servant of Kishore Kishori. That's very easy. We all can say that. Yeah, I'm a servant of Srila Prabhupada and Kishore Kishori. Well, what is the most dear thing to Prabhupada and Kishore Kishori? It's their devotees. So I'm a servant of the devotees, naturally. You know, my purpose is to serve those my Lord, Shishi Kishore Kishori, and those who are Shishi Kishore Kishoris, everything that belongs to them. I'm just a servant. You know, these are all the Prabhus and the mothers that belong, that their Kishore is dear devotees. So that's the mood. It's an austerity. It's huge. Because we have, you know, we have our condition, we have our egos, we think, you know, this and that, you know. So, but we have to do it. So, it is as an important thing. So, the other thing is just the natural, the consequences of it. Apologize is just a symptom of someone who's cultivating those principles. Thoughtfulness is a symptom. Being conscious is a symptom. Being of service is a symptom of someone who's cultivating those principles. And those are the ones that is we have to do. We have no other choice. It's Lord Chaitanya's order, Lord Chaitanya's instruction, and it makes sense. Makes much more sense. Okay. Any other question from anyone?
Mataji?
No, her. Behind you.
Thank you for the class. I had a question, like, if we consider God to be an impersonal Brahmjyoti, like an effulgent light, then, or the deity, we think that the deity has a part of Brahmjyoti in it. Is it wrong, like, to think like that? That because, like, if we think that sun is part of the God, and which is part of light, which is like just impersonal love personified, then is it wrong to consider God to be impersonal?
No, it's not wrong. It's just incomplete. It's not the full. It's explained that Krishna manifests himself, or is the full, the deities that Brahmajyoti, Jyoti means the Brahman effulgent. And so that effulgence comes from, you know, the source of that effulgent is Kishore. So it's not wrong. You can separate the effulgence from the source of the effulgence. Like you can separate, Prabhupada explained, you can separate sunlight from the sun. But you understand that sunlight comes from the sun. But you can separate it. You can still say, you know, that the sunlight is one with the sun. They can be separated. So the conception that that God is impersonal, the absolute truth is impersonal, is correct, but it's not complete. The complete is that the absolute truth is at the same time is a person and also is an impersonal. So the person, from the person, from that supreme person, then that light emanates. That impersonal light emanate. So that's more or less the understanding. So it's not a complete understanding. The complete understanding is that the Lord, the scriptures tell us, it manifests in three ways. The absolute truth is have three ways. The impersonal, localized means, you know, that he is in the heart of all living entities as Paramatma, and Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these three aspects are there. When you understand it, you know, as a whole, then you have a complete understanding. If you only take one, then you're missing the other two. So it's not complete.
Briefly, answer like the other aspect. I'm thinking of, for example, you were mentioning
tolerance, of course, humility. Can you answer the question regarding, let's say, like Bhaktisiddhanta or Martin Luther King, when they were, they never retaliated against the people who tried to even kill them. It's not like, I'm going to get revenge. But at the same time, it's not like they were saying, I'll be humble since you're telling me to be quiet. You know, you might slander my reputation, you might kill my life. Can you answer that one, that aspect of tolerance and humility? What is the difference between, you know, some people say, okay, let me be tolerant and humble. So if any opposition tells me to be quiet, I should shut up. Or, you know, they might slander my reputation. So what is the difference between those different aspects of humility? Because we see that people try to kill Bhaktisiddhanta, and it's not like he got his crew of devotees to say, get them back, I'm going to kill them. But he never, it's not like he was like, I'm not going to stop speaking. Nor did Martin Luther King or some of the leaders throughout the world. They didn't care about their prestige. So can you answer a little about that? And basically, like, one thing I appreciate about Bhaktisiddhanta, he said real humility is not found in external show of humility. So we may be quiet all the time, but that doesn't mean we're not offending devotees in the mind. That's one aspect also. So can you kind of assimilate those points a little bit?
For our purpose,
yeah.
For myself, then you're tolerant, but you don't tolerate someone offending the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or someone offending or attacking the devotees. That's something that you don't tolerate. So, but as far as for yourself, someone may insult me, and I tolerate. But if I see someone insulting my Guru Maharaj, you know, I take a bath. You know, you won't be quiet. You know, you take, you know, something like that. So for the purpose of, you know, for yourself, no. For the devotees, yes. You know. And sometimes it makes sense not to, you know, your superiors tell you, be quiet, and then you obey. But you can react. Why not? We've seen it. Example, I think, Prabhupada would be very heavy, you know, if someone sort of offended Krishna or bring some, yeah. So, I don't know. We stop here. Thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.